Hello, Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to another edition of My Old Kentucky Podcast. I'm Jasmine Smith, and not as always, Robert Connie is not here with me today. He's on vacation, so I'm here trying to figure out this podcast equipment and bring you some news on Kentucky politics and policy. And today we're going to talk about juvenile justice and Matt Bevin's sermon at Western Middle School. I'm not alone, though. I have a really great guest, Yvette De La Guardia, is here with me today. Yvette is a really intelligent and awesome attorney, and she knows a lot about criminal justice, but particularly juvenile justice. The reason we wanted to talk about this today are, one, Robert's not here, so I can talk about whatever I want, and this is something that I really like and care about, and two, there's kind of been this portrayal in the media that juveniles have been responsible for a lot of violent crime. There have been a couple high-profile cases in Louisville and in Lexington that are kind of perpetuating this notion that juveniles are the ones committing crimes. And I think that there are a lot of misconceptions about the juvenile justice system, and there's also problems with it. But today, we wanted to highlight two issues, diversion programs and transfer and waiver laws. And if you don't know what those are yet, that's okay. We're going to tell you about them. Yvette, thank you so much for being here with us today. So first, we want to talk about diversion programs. And the reason we chose this issue is for a very particular purpose. We're really pissed off. Gil Corsi, who's a reporter for WDRB, recently did a piece on the diversion program created by Senate Bill 200, which was a bill passed in 2015 that made changes, some major and some minor, to Kentucky's juvenile justice system. The basic premise of this piece that Gil Corsi did was that diversion programs have caused an increase in juvenile crime, which is kind of a big statement to make and doesn't make a ton of sense to us. So we wanted to highlight some of the issues with that piece and talk to you about what diversion is. So let's start with what that is, and then we'll talk about all the things wrong with this piece. So first, what is Senate Bill 200? Yvette, what did that bill do?
Senate Bill 200 was a piece of legislation that passed in order to sort of front load services for kids and to keep them out of, some of them out of court. The stated purpose of Senate Bill 200 is that they want to hold youth accountable, achieve better outcomes for youth and their families, and maintain public safety. So the idea behind Senate Bill 200 is that we're going to front load services and programs in the community and diversion where that's appropriate, and then save money and resources for the more serious offenders.
Okay, so that bill created, well, there was already a diversion program, but it made changes to it. What is diversion?
So diversion, and there are two different kinds that we see in practice. In the way that the WDRB reporter covered diversion, he's talking about court-designated worker diversion, which is an opportunity for some kids, usually kids who don't have records, who haven't been in trouble before, and who are charged with misdemeanors, nonviolent offenses. It's an opportunity for them to go to the court-designated worker's office and complete various tasks. Sometimes it's volunteer work, other times it can be various notebooks designed to address the behavior that led the kid to end up picking up a charge in the first place. But it's an opportunity to keep kids who don't need to be in court out of court.
Right, so it's basically like an early intervention program for something that's not as serious as other crimes, something maybe like a shoplifting or something like that, right? Okay, so why do you think diversion is a good thing?
So we know, when I say we, I mean the juvenile justice community, we know that children who are brought into court time and time again, or even just once, that can have a really stigmatizing effect on children. So I think diversion is a good thing because it allows children who don't need to be going into court where there are sheriffs, where there's a judge, who in Jefferson County we have a really good judge, but still any contact with the juvenile justice system can be a bad thing. Diversion is good because it allows children to be held accountable for their mistakes while not having a juvenile record and while not having to be put in a position where they may, I guess, start to see themselves or identify as a kid.
So you're saying there's a stigma with entering a courtroom.
Yes, absolutely.
And dealing with the case in court, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that's kind of what a diversion program is. It's an early intervention program for, you know, less serious, nonviolent crimes, and it's designed to keep kids out of court. So the changes that were made were enacted in 2015, and so we've been, you know, almost 2 years now with this new Senate Bill 200. So Gil Corsi decides to write this piece on diversion and the kind of effects we've had since it's been enacted. So let's talk about this WDRB piece. First, of course, he talks a little bit about the Senate bill. He actually, in the video, he prints it all out and like slaps the pages on the wall kind of aggressively. But he says that children used to only get up to 2 diversions and now they get 4. They get 3 misdemeanor diversions and 1 felony. What do you think about that statement? Does that seem accurate to you, or is that how it actually works?
That doesn't seem accurate at all, especially in practice. I think that what he's saying is that every kid who picks up a charge has at least 4 shots at diversion. I'm a juvenile court attorney.
I've never seen that, never.
Seen that. I'm not saying that it doesn't, but typically in Jefferson County, when a child picks up 1 charge, if it's a misdemeanor and it's something that's eligible to be processed through the court-designated worker's office for diversion, that's usually their first shot.
Right.
So once they get their diversion on that low-level, non-violent offense, if they pick up something else, that usually comes to court.
Right. I've never seen a child have 4 diversions before, I don't think. And so he's presenting this as children get to commit 4 crimes right before they ever see the courtroom, and that's just not true. I've never seen it.
It's not, and the other thing is that it's kind of irresponsible to not make a distinction between mandatory diversion and discretionary diversion, and I think that...
So what do you mean by that? Explain that a little bit.
So under Senate Bill 200, children who are charged with a misdemeanor offense, their first misdemeanor charge, must go through court-designated worker diversion. So those children are entitled to it. It's a mandatory thing. They go to the CDW's office, and they have their diversion.
And that's only if their first charge is a misdemeanor, right? If they picked up a felony charge, that wouldn't be
exactly
diverted. It wouldn't be mandatory.
Right, and that's what I'm saying about discretionary. There's some discretion there, but usually the felonies come straight to court. And often, I think, in my experience, I've seen charges that are settled for misdemeanors in juvenile court
right
that were charged as felonies, so that kid
could have had a diversion opportunity potentially,
but lost it. And I think he may have talked a little bit about status offenses. I don't, the focus of his report seemed to be a lot on juvenile crime,
right?
So when he's talking about diversions, he's not really making a distinction between what kids are getting shots at multiple diversions. I think that you're more likely to see that with what we call status offenses. So kids who have been accused of truancy, which is not attending school, beyond control of their parent, or running away, things like that. Those kids may have more diversion opportunities, but kids who are committing crimes in Jefferson County, they don't.
Right. If the first charge they picked up was a misdemeanor, they likely had that one, but it's kind of rare to see multiple diversions. And so to say that every child's going to get 4 diversions before they ever see a courtroom is just practically so not true at all.
It's inaccurate. It's just not the way that the law operates and is designed to function either.
Right. So that's the first point he makes. The next point, he says in pretty emphatic language that 5 of 7 juveniles that are charged with murder were on diversion. What do you think about that statement?
I'm not sure what he meant by that statement. I think that...
Do you think that he's confused about what diversion means?
So, like, at the beginning of the segment, I said that there are 2 different types of diversions. There's the court-designated worker diversion, and then there's something called... There's diversion in practice that we used to use before this new expungement law. So, to say that a kid is on diversion, 5 of the 7, I just don't know what he means by that. Does he mean that they were...
That they had a charge diverted at some point?
Might be
what he means.
So, it's not like that murder is getting diverted.
Right, it's absolutely not.
Right, or any serious case. So,
I think he's trying to make a point that if he's talking about these 5 of 7 juveniles that have been charged with a murder had diversion at some point, he's trying to make some kind of correlation between being on diversion and picking up murder charges,
right,
which is just like a huge, huge stretch.
And I think that part of the reason that is such a stretch is because a lot of times what the kids are going to do at diversion is exactly what they would be asked to do if they came to court. Because part of holding kids accountable, it looks the same a lot of times. It could be volunteer work, like I said, doing a packet, seeing a doctor. Diversion can require you to go get a counseling assessment and do any kind of follow-up. That's a lot of the same kind of stuff that happens in juvenile court. So to say that a kid who was on diversion and then picked up a murder, picked that murder up because he's on diversion is insane.
Right. It just doesn't, it's crazy. There's not a causation element there at all. And but he makes it, like, he shows pictures of all the kids in court and
really inflammatory.
And it's really inflammatory. I agree. So next he kind of gives us some statistics. He said 166 children came back to court with more serious charges. That seems really low to me.
It does.
166 is not that many. Think of...
It's sad that you have any, like, triple-digit number of kids picking up crimes.
And right.
I think that this report was just so inflammatory and, like, he was really getting at people's, like, emotions. I think that these numbers, people aren't really thinking about what they actually mean. So, you're right. 166 is low, but he made it seem like it was something really, really high.
Right. And he also said that as the number of juveniles receiving diversion increases, so increases the number of those reoffending. So in 2015, about 1,100 kids were on diversion and 58 returned with more serious charges. In 2016, since, you know, Senate Bill 200 was enacted, 1,600 juveniles received diversion and 166 returned with charges. He's saying that that number is rising, but that means that there were 500 more kids on diversion and only 100 more came back with charges. So numbers don't mean what he thinks they mean, right. I feel like. And he also said that 40% reoffend within 2 years.
Which means that 60% don't.
Right, so we actually have a better rate of children not reoffending within 2 years. And 2 years is a pretty long period as well. A child whose brain is still developing, who is still an adolescent, they're probably a different person from 14 to 16, right. 13 to 15.
And I think that's the other really important piece of all this, is that we're forgetting that we're talking about children, which is super important because kids are a lot different than adults, right?
Right.
We know that their brains aren't fully developed, the part of the brain that controls their ability to make decisions and perceive consequences. All of that is still growing. And one of our friends made a good comment about Mr. Corsi's report, and he said that he seems to be upset with the rehabilitative purpose of the juvenile justice system. And I think that's a fair and accurate assessment.
What do you mean by that?
Part of the juvenile justice system, while holding kids accountable, is to also help them get treatment and to learn ways to not recidivize or pick up new charges,
right.
to stay away from picking up charges. So Gil Corsi sort of talked about this and slammed diversion, but he didn't say what diversion was about or why we do it.
So you think his problem was probably a greater problem with how the juvenile justice system is treated and rehabilitative purpose?
It seems that
rather
way.
Than retributive.
Right. So when he's complaining about how long it takes, inaccurately though, before a kid comes to court, why do you want a kid in court so bad? Like, I don't understand. Especially when the things that happen in court, a lot of times for the kids that we're talking about who would be entitled to diversion, it's the same thing.
Right, so what she means when she says it's the same thing, you mean that they are probably getting the same kind of treatment, like a counseling assessment or community service or something like
that.
The
same consequences.
They're getting the same consequences, but now they have a record instead of going through a diversion program.
And now they've had contact with the judge, they've been threatened with incarceration, they've had to miss school to come to court.
Right. So basically, Mr. Corsi sums up the piece by interviewing a juvenile. And it seems like he's trying to show that this juvenile really had no consequences and that he's not scared of the system.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically ends with this final conclusion that the diversion program has caused crime to go up. What's your problem with that?
I think that you stated it, Jasmine, when you said that there's no, like, correlation piece to this.
Right.
The other thing that, my other issue with this is that he's complaining about something that he doesn't appear to understand completely. This system is designed, like I said, to hold youth accountable, but it's also to give them opportunities and to help rehabilitate them. Diversion is a good thing. And he's slamming it because he thinks that, mistakenly, that these kids are picking up charges at a higher rate. I think that just my issue with the piece was that he didn't seem to have a true appreciation of the law, of the numbers, and of what the juvenile justice system is designed to do.
Right.
And he didn't offer any solutions. Like, okay,
no.
So now what? What do you want to...
Basically, we felt like this piece was pretty inflammatory, and we wanted to make sure that people understood what diversion programs were and how they work. And another reason we're talking about this issue and juvenile justice issues today is because we hope to have State Senator Whitney Westerfeld on the show soon. And so when we talk to him about juvenile justice, we want our listeners to have a picture of what it looks like. We were just a little upset about this piece and how it portrayed this law. And so we wanted to share with you all what it actually was. So I hope you all have learned something about diversion. Yvette, do you think I missed anything else that was wrong about this piece?
Just that diversion is a good thing. It is a good thing for kids, it's a good thing for families, and it's a good thing for communities.
Right. And like we said, 60% do not reoffend within 2 years. And that's a good percentage, I think.
I think it just seems like whenever a law is passed or something, people, their expectations are so high. These are human beings. You're not going to have 100%, you know,
right,
success rates.
So next we wanted to talk about transfer and waiver laws. And listeners, you may have no idea what we mean when we say that, but what we are talking about is children being tried as adults. So Yvette, can you kind of explain, you know, as simple of terms as possible, what waiver and transfer statutes are?
Sure. So like you said, transfer and waiver statutes are laws that are used to send children to circuit court to be prosecuted, tried, and receive sentences as if they were adults. So I think out in the state, in places other than Jefferson County, they don't really make a distinction between transfer and waiver. I think they call everything waiver. But in Kentucky, here in Jefferson County, transfer statutes are where if you are 14 years old, you commit a felony and are alleged to have committed that felony with a firearm, your case automatically goes to circuit court where you would be tried as an adult upon the juvenile court finding that there was probable cause, which is a very, very low standard for all of those things. But part of my issue with these statutes are that you can send a kid to circuit court under something called a complicity theory. So it's not always the kid with the gun. It can be...
So you're saying, okay, for example, a robbery with a gun. That's, you know, an armed robbery. The person with the gun is certainly using a firearm in the commission of the offense. But what if there's a person driving a getaway car, as people say? What about that person?
That person could be prosecuted against under a complicity theory.
So this means that we're transferring cases where people involved may not even have a firearm, but it still gets sent to circuit court to be tried as an adult.
Right. So that's what we call automatic transfer, right? 14, gun, felony, boom, you're in circuit. The other set of laws are what we in Jefferson County called waiver statutes. That's where if you're a certain age, and the cutoff in Kentucky is 14, so you can be in eighth grade. If you're a certain age and you are alleged to have committed a certain level felony, the judge will hear evidence. If he finds probable cause to those things, then in Jefferson County we pass it for another hearing where the judge has to look at 8 different factors in Kentucky's juvenile code to determine whether or not basically it's in the kid's best interest to go to circuit.
Okay, so this is more of a discretionary thing where the judge gets to hear about this kid's life, about their prior record, and other things, and then they would make a decision whether they should be tried as an adult. Okay, so we've talked about what those laws are. What are the consequences of a child being tried as an adult in circuit court?
In circuit court, the kid is looking at a sentence as though he were an adult. So a violent offense, like a robbery one, the minimum amount of time a child can get is 10 years in prison. Will that happen? We don't know. Because there are still certain protections and opportunities that these statutes give to kids, like they can ask for probation earlier and things like that. But that doesn't change the other pretty significant consequences that a kid who goes to circuit and is either found guilty by trial or pleads guilty becomes a convicted felon.
So these laws start at age 14, so this means that a 14-year-old could potentially be a convicted felon before they even reached adulthood.
Right. If you're a convicted felon, you lose a lot of civil rights and things that they don't even have yet. So your right to vote, to be on a jury, things like that.
Right. They never have those rights to
begin
with.
Right. So we're stripping away these rights before kids even had them.
You used an example, a robbery, and the consequence for that would be 10 to 20 years in prison. If they were tried in juvenile court, to be clear, they would not face time in prison, correct?
Correct.
It would be time in a juvenile facility, and it would be nowhere near a 10-year sentence.
Right. I don't want people to think that these juvenile facilities, because I think there's also this idea that they're just kind of like these really like cozy, soft boot camps. They're not like that. These are kids who are being taken away from their families. In Jefferson County, at least, they're often placed 2 to 3 hours away. They're not allowed to have visits with their parents every day, things that are really important and beneficial to a child's development.
Right.
These kids who've already often had it pretty bad are missing out on. And something that I think is a terrible consequence of sending a kid to circuit is that even when they go to circuit, they can't go to prison until they're 18. So they go to these camps, these DJJ facilities.
Okay, explain what you mean by camp and DJJ facilities.
So whenever one of the options for children, whether they're prosecuted in juvenile court or as adult in circuit, before they're 18, most of the time, they are committed to the Department of Juvenile Justice, which is an agency here in Kentucky designed to sort of help juveniles who have these delinquent behaviors. When they get committed to the Department of Juvenile Justice and they get placed in a residential facility, we call it camp.
But just to be clear, it's not like going to camp for the summer. No.
They're more like residential hospitals. So kids are expected to participate in therapy. They're able to learn a trade. They get help with medication management, things like that. But the issue with that kind of thing is when you have a kid in circuit who goes and say that kid, his life or her life wasn't on track before, but he, since being in a DJJ facility, has gotten a high school diploma, learned a trade. Then he's still a convicted felon though. So that makes it hard to re-enter into the community and to be successful.
I think you and I would both agree that sending kids to circuit court is bad because of the consequences they face and the status of becoming a convicted felon. But, you know, there are some people who agree with these laws because they think you're holding the more serious offenders accountable. But why do you think, other than what we've said, why do you think that transfer and waiver statutes are bad? Are there any other reasons other than the status of being a convicted felon?
Yeah, I think that it's given what science and sociology says about children and the way that they're parented now, I think it's a disproportionate response. So there's been a lot of United States Supreme Court cases that talk about children and their diminished culpability, right? So like we were talking about their brain development earlier, it's their prefrontal cortex. That part of the brain isn't completely developed until you're into your 20s. So we know that they're bad decision makers, that they're risk taking, they're more susceptible.
Impulsive.
Right. That they're more susceptible to peer pressure, things like that. So we are criminalizing forever a child for something that he or she could potentially grow out of. That's my biggest frustration with that, because I think Brian Stevenson said this, you are more than your worst act, right? So even if a kid does do something horrible, they're still children who are capable of growth and rehabilitation. The transfer and waiver statutes, to me, deprive children of real shot of rehabilitation, because we know that children who go to circuit are more likely to recidivize.
So what do you think we can do about this?
I would love to see automatic transfer statutes gone. I would love to see waiver statutes gone, honestly, but I understand that a little bit more.
Right.
So making things discretionary, having a judge really look at the child that they're sending, have a familiarity with the child's, you know, socioeconomic status, what his life was like, things like that, so that judges can have informed opinions about the level of a child's culpability and their potential for rehabilitation before sending them to circuit.
So you're saying getting rid of the automatic transfer, which, like you said, is 14, felony, gun, boom, you're in circuit. Getting rid of that and making it all discretionary, where a judge gets to look at those 8 factors that
right.
we talked about.
And that's happening in some places across the country. So it's definitely a trend nationally. We're starting to treat kids as kids, and hope it's something that Kentucky picks up
right.
on.
And so we've had our transfer statute since the 90s, early 90s, I believe.
Most states have since the 90s.
And Senator Whitney Westerfield, I think in the original juvenile justice bill this past session, I think he was proposing to make everything discretionary, but obviously those parts were cut out of it because, as you can see, we still have automatic transfer laws. So this is something I definitely want to talk to him about and see if it's feasible. Could a bill like that ever pass? I don't know, but it is a national trend. We're seeing other states get rid of these laws, so hopefully Kentucky will take some action. Criminal justice is something that has bipartisan support, but I don't know if it has enough support for something like that to pass.
And speaking of bipartisan support, Senate Bill 200 definitely had that.
Right, it was a huge bipartisan
right.
effort. And Whitney Westerfield, who is a Republican, has kind of led the charge with some of this juvenile justice reform. I think he can get other Republicans on board. I hope. So that's what transfer and waiver laws are. So a lot of times you will hear things in the news like so-and-so juvenile will be tried as an adult. Now you know what that means and how it happens. And you know that we're hoping to get rid of it or at least change it and make it a little bit better and more discretionary. So finally, last but not least, our governor has made some national news and maybe embarrassed us a little bit again. So this is a criminal justice adjacent topic, I feel like. Matt Bevin recently called a meeting at Western Middle School, that's in Louisville. He invited religious leaders, elected officials, and other community members. I will say most of those people who attended were white, to discuss the violence in the west end of Louisville. So he had this simple plan, he said, that he was going to propose to curb violence. And what was it? Prayer. Matt Bevin urged groups of three or more people to pick a block in one of the five different zip codes with a high crime rate, walk for 30 minutes several times a week, starting at 7 p.m., and stop to use the power of prayer at each corner. He urged these prayer patrols to take ownership of the block so that, quote, a piece of your heart and soul is left around the edges of that block every time you walk it. So afterwards, Louisville faith leaders, reverends, pastors who were there said things like, I needed a barf bag, this plan is an insult, and I'm embarrassed for Christianity. So Yvette, what do you think about this meeting?
Well, first of all, I just think that faith can be a really beautiful thing. And I think that to say that, you know, we should be praying, yeah, that's great. But it's so hurtful and just offensive to be in a position of, like, political authority and have these duties to the people of Kentucky.
Right.
And to only say that. Like, if there was some other issue that the governor was especially passionate about, I don't think he would just say, let's pray on it.
Right. He would pass legislation.
Right.
Or get resources, exactly, or funding for that issue, probably.
Right. So that's my issue with it, is not that people, not asking people to pray. That's fine. That can be a very beautiful thing. But you're in a position of authority, and you have responsibilities to the people of Kentucky, and those people include the people of the West End. So when that's your response, and people come out to see you, and that's all you say, it's just, I imagine these people are super hurt.
Right, so Matt Bevin is finally coming to your part of town to talk to you, say he has this plan, you spend your day to attend this meeting, and that's what he says.
It also assumes that people aren't already doing that, you know what I mean?
Right, and that's what a lot of the pastors and religious leaders who attended that meeting said. He's preaching at us about how to preach, but he's not giving us actual solutions. Joe Phelps, who is the pastor at Highland Baptist Church, wrote a really good Courier Journal article that I have linked in our show notes, and he said that he was embarrassed for Christianity, and he is standing by that statement. So attendees said that they came in giving the governor the benefit of the doubt, and they hoped this meeting would be a dialogue, but it ended up being totally one-sided. Pastors even came to the governor with, they had 10 recommendations to combat violence. So they all came with these 10 things that could be done. Just a few examples of those were restoring the rights of felons,
right,
reforming gun legislation, etc., etc. But they feel like they weren't heard at all. And they said that Bevin just preached at them and cherry-picked scripture to fit his agenda.
It just seems very dismissive.
That's another way that it's offensive. It seems dismissive of the West End's problems. They think he's coming to offer solutions, and offering a solution that doesn't involve resources or funding or legislation is kind of disrespectful and offensive to me.
Not even an appearance of sort of like caring.
Right. Bevin said this can be a thing that people plan themselves. It doesn't have to be a meeting or something you have to go to. He said this is a simple, non-financial solution. Just go and do these prayer walks. That's kind of how the meeting ended. And I think there were some people there that clapped for him. I'm guessing those are people that maybe go to his church. I don't know. But a lot of people left offended, disappointed, and embarrassed. So that's where we are with that. It did make national news. USA Today and several other news outlets picked it up, that Matt Bevin is offering prayer as a solution to curb violence. We would hope that a plan would offer something like funding, programs, even faith-based community programs,
right,
can be a really good thing, right?
Absolutely. I think a lot of studies and research finds that those are often the most beneficial things for communities, but those are things like after-school programs and...
Right, they don't just require a prayer group,
right,
it requires working with people,
right,
in the community, like you said, after-school programs, transfer centers, addiction, like community centers, things like that. I believe the governor said that at some point there will be a meeting in the future that might involve other solutions, but for now he has suggested prayer.
Has he said that to any other group of people or, I don't know, any other community in crisis?
Right, I don't know. Like, Matt Bevin is passionate about foster care and adoption, and I'm sure that he's attended a lot of different groups and meetings to talk about foster care and adoption, and I'm sure that he talked about prayer, but he also hired an adoption czar.
Okay.
You know, he hired a person to reform that system. So here, he's just offering prayer with no other solution, I guess.
Yeah, and that's where it's really hurtful. Like, you're so clearly picking and choosing who you want to help.
Right.
And these people don't seem to be among those people.
Exactly. So that is that. Prayer will end the violence in our city. Finally, we have some quick hits. The first one is that private prisons may be coming back to Kentucky. The Bevin administration has plans for moving state inmates to a private prison in Lee County just 4 years after the Beshear administration ended the use of for-profit prisons in Kentucky. I'm sure that's something that we will follow up on because it seems like it may be happening soon, and so that will probably be a story in weeks to come. Another thing that will be a story in weeks to come, Governor Bevin said he will call a special session sometime after August 15th. So the special session will be to overhaul the tax code and deal with the pension crisis. And we've talked about this for a while now, that we knew that that was something that would probably happen in 2017. The governor says it will happen sometime after August 15th. And finally, a second ethics complaint has been filed against the governor related to his home in Anchorage. And this one was filed by Representative Daryl Owens in Louisville. I'm guessing probably next week or sometime in the near future, we will be talking more about that. We've been kind of updating you guys on the story with the Anchorage home, so we'll be following up on that soon. Yvette, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks, Jasmine.
And listeners, thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us on Twitter at @myoldkypod. You can like us on Facebook. You can check out our show notes on Medium. And you can find our podcast on just about any podcasting app. And you can find Yvette on Twitter @Yvette_DeLa if you would like to chat with her about juvenile justice or her love for Chance the Rapper.
Yeah.
Thank you.